On today's show, the Cavs got Donovan Mitchell back, but maybe lost him again and lost to the New York Knicks. We're going to talk all about that game and the Cavs' three-point defense in this episode of Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel, who are, by the way, the official sports betting partner of Locked On. Make every moment more with FanDuel. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Through the Store. That man over there is Evan Damerill. He is the proprietor of Write Down Euclid here in the great city of Cleveland. In segment one today, we're going to talk about Donovan Mitchell being back after missing a couple games with a groin injury, and then him having to maybe miss some more time. Segment two, we're going to give it our game awards for Cavs Knicks. Segment three, we're going to look at the Cavs three-point defense and look at the rotation as it currently exists now that they had everyone healthy, and maybe what this first game against New York tells us about where J.B. Bickerstaff's head is with all of that. But Evan, let's start with Donovan Mitchell, who had a pretty good performance, but the big struggle is obviously that he gets hurt at the end of this game, and as of now, we do not know the severity of that injury. He has said post-game that he cramped up, that his groin is hurting. It feels like it did last week when he was out. This is a bummer more than anything else, because Mitchell is back. He had some Donovan Mitchell fourth quarter heroics, some stuff I didn't love that we'll get into. That was felt like more of a strategy thing, but he gets hurt again, and who knows how long he's going to be out now.
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing in the grand scheme of things, because first and foremost, groin injuries are super duper tricky. Just really hard to diagnose them in general. It's really like a game time feel thing. Like in this scenario, like he felt like it tightened up again. Yeah, on top of his legs cramping up as well in that final possession against New York. And it's scary because groin injuries kind of just are super fickle. It's a soft tissue injury. If you tweak it just the wrong way, you can just set things back. And part of me, like, yeah, if you're the Cavs, if he's feeling right, if he checks all of his boxes, you want him out there playing because he's just so integral to what you do on both sides of the basketball and especially on offense. But at the same time, like, this is like the devil on my shoulder here too, talking just like, what if the Cavs just let him rest completely, like make sure he was 100% ship shape and right? But I don't know. You can always think about what if hindsight is 2020 after the fact too, but this is a pretty big bummer because Mitchell was very impactful in this game. Like his shot wasn't falling for a lot of it. It felt like he was pressing a little bit at times, but he was able to make an impact down the stretch and really keep the Cavs in this game against New York, especially considering how bad he was the first time. Like this was a pretty good game for Mitchell in the grand scheme of things. It's just at what cost at the end of the day, just because this was a tough loss for Cleveland if he is out possibly long term.
Yeah, so Mitchell plays 38 minutes, 9 of 24 from the field, 6 of 14 from 3, had 8 assists, had 6 rebounds, 24. Tied for a team by 24 points. Evan, where I come down on this is I think if Mitchell is going to be out for a little bit here, like if he's going to be out and you're going to have to deal with this, maybe just like sit him up till the All-Star break or give him like a full 2 weeks off. Like at this point, clearly, like maybe this wasn't 100% right for him to be back. Clearly, maybe like there's some lagging stuff going on here with this injury, and like clearly maybe like 38 minutes off of the bat was a lot, and maybe like asking a little bit too much of to just throw him down into the fire with what's going on here. I think the most important thing you can do now is, you know, take stock of this, make sure he's like actually healed when he comes back, and understand you're in a fight now. Like the East is going to be very competitive. It always was this way. It is even more so now as the Heat have gotten closer, as you've fallen a little bit behind the pack and you're in fifth. getting Mitchell right is kind of your best, like, long term for this season to maximize this year. Mitchell being right in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, with this injury is more important than, you know, trying to rack up some wins in the short term if he does decide to play.
I agree. And I tweeted this after the game, like, yeah, the loss sucks in the grand scheme of things, if you're hyper obsessed with standings and things like that. But Donovan Mitchell's health is the main prerogative here. I think it's encouraging he was able to walk under his own power. Obviously, we'll see how he's feeling the day after. But if he's already feeling sore and had a little bit of a panic that his groin tightened up on him, or he feels like he tweaked it again, like, that's not encouraging. I agree. Maybe playing him 37 minutes isn't the right call, but I do wonder if it's, one, he's telling the coaching staff he's okay to play, he feels fine in the moment, but two, the Cavs were just so hyper-focused on trying to win this game because they are not a good road team. And like you said, the Heat are within striking distance and the Knicks are kind of biting at their ankles a little bit in the standings, and the Cavs have slipped the top three to the top five. And I'm not saying they're a play-in team or anything like that, but I agree with you. I think you can maybe roll the dice a little bit. Like, looking at their upcoming schedule, yes, they play the Thunder and the Rockets to close out this week, and then they play the Clippers at home, which may feature Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and that could be a tough game. And they play the same Heat on January 31st, so a week from yesterday, because this is Wednesday's episode of the show. So yeah, some of those games do matter, but the Cavs realistically could go 2-2, 3-1 in that stretch, and then just kind of crawl their way to the All-Star break, try to win more games than lose them. They could also just lose more games. It's fine, but Cleveland should probably know better than anyone that, just based on last year, like, Darius Garland's back more or less was just giving out heading into the All-Star break, and the Cavs had to shut him down for the better part of weeks after the All-Star break just to make sure he was right. And he still wasn't 100% when he came back, because it feels like it just was a constant issue where Cleveland just kind of can't afford that, because Donovan Mitchell is their most important player. He is their MVP. He is their offensive engine and kind of the guy who will carry them to the finish line most nights. And if he's not 100% and you keep re-aggravating this, like, it's just going to be a constant vicious cycle of, oh, we tried to win game 50 and 51 in the middle or late January, early February, when, and winning these meaningless games in late January, early February isn't going to have an impact in the grand scheme of things if your best player just isn't upright by the time the playoffs roll around. And I think if you're Cleveland, you're a team that wants to make the playoffs. That's why you went and got Donovan Mitchell in the first place. And he's so integral to everything you do that, like, you can't afford to, like, risk him having a recurring injury just all throughout the remainder of the season, pre-All-Star break and post-All-Star break, because you're just going to be hurting yourself long-term at that point.
The other thing with Mitchell that I think is worth noting is he has the last three possessions where he gets stonewalled at the rim. Evan, I found these possessions to just be very one note. I found these possessions to be very just asking Donovan Mitchell to solve all of your problems for you. I don't think this is dynamic enough offense. I don't think this is the best use of Mitchell in those situations. I think you should aim higher for what you're trying to do in the situations. Like, run some other actions. Do something that's not just say, hey, let's have Darius Green so we get the lesser of the two guards on a Mitchell and he has to create an ISO and score on a big at the rim. I think you got to empower Mitchell more than you are in that situation. It cannot just be Mitchell, here's the ball, go save us and do stuff, some of the stuff. That was the case late in this game. He had a bunch of possessions earlier before that in the last like 5 minutes where he really did do that stuff. I just, for me, I don't think that is like really like sustainable, really, really good offensive basketball. No. It is not the best use of Mitchell. It is not the best use of Darius Garland. And you have these other skill guys, and I understand the spacing is cramped and all of that. I think you got to be better than that if you're going to execute and win some of these games. Some of these games, to me, Evan, I feel like you're leaving possible wins on the table by like how tight and cramped and just kind of unimaginative they can get in the last few minutes of games when it's like, Donovan, Darius, save us. And that's the whole game plan.
Yeah, that was a lot of the issue with last season, too, was the Cavs were so heavily reliant on Darius Garland down the stretch in just any offensive possession. And now you're seeing it times two with both Garland and Mitchell out there. So it's tough to really like indicate what is and isn't working like defensively, but like offensively it's super vanilla. And I think if you're the Cavs, it's a little frustrating, and maybe a lot of it is not having guys at full strength like Dean Wade or Kevin Love, who clearly just isn't right because of the thumb injury, or Ricky Rubio, who is kind of the player that I thought he was going to be when he first came to Cleveland and is just, you know, clearly showing signs that he's still recovering too. Like the Cavs are doing this balancing act where they're trying to make everyone fit in. And I think just in the moment, just for one game, they're like, okay, maybe we can lean on Hero Ball a little bit more. And then maybe when Dean Wade is right and Kevin Love is feeling better, we can run some like spread pick and roll sets with either Donovan or Darius and just like trying to make things a little bit more a little bit dynamic instead of static at times. And it's frustrating to watch happen because this Cavs team is just kind of too talented to be doing that. And it is a fair question still. Like, the Cavs brought in Luke Walton to work pretty much exclusively with Evan Mobley at this point. And you have to wonder, like, who is really drawing up these plays in late game situations? And do the Cavs need more of an offensive voice on the bench instead of just more player development at this juncture?
Yeah, I don't even think it's like not even a player development thing. It's like more to me, it's just like I think the buck ultimately does stop with, like, ultimately because he's the head coach, like this lands with Bickerstaff. And it's, I think it's the scope of how you evolve it. And like if he decides it needs to evolve or not, I think that responsibility ultimately falls on him. All right, after this break, we're going to come back and we're going to give out our game awards. Notable that the Cavs are now two games up on the Heat, they're fifth. The Heat beat the Celtics on Tuesday night, so the Cavs are now two games up on the six-seeded Heat in the East for those keeping score at home. But first, today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. The NFL playoffs are here, and look, we're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sports book in America. And if you're new to FanDuel, who is the number one sports book in America, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today and get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed. That's one and a half wilts when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/lockedon. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to point spreads to player props. They have same game parlays as well. You can even combine your bets again for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. Looking ahead to next weekend, you have the AFC and NFC Championship games. You have the Chiefs favored over the Bengals by 1.5. The Eagles are 2.5 over the 49ers. They have all kinds of NBA stuff as well. Cavs futures, NBA title futures, MVP stuff. They have everything over at FanDuel. So, football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right, Chris Manning and Evan Damerill here, back here with you on the Locked On Cavs podcast. Evan, let's go to our game awards. Who's your MVP?
My MVP, it's Donovan Mitchell. Like I could talk about in the first segment, he wasn't the best shooting-wise tonight, but he made a lot of shots that mattered and a lot of shots that just made the difference for Cleveland and more or less had them in this ball game down the stretch. And it's a shame things ended the way they did. Again, you hope that he is healthy and able to play maybe not both games against Oklahoma City and Houston, but he's at least available for this upcoming weekend slate for Cleveland. But he was the best player for me tonight in my eyes, especially just considering how poorly he played, at least the first time he went back to Madison Square Garden. Like, this was a bit of a good recovery game for Mitchell in the end of things.
Yeah, if they would have won, he was my pick. If they had pulled this out, get a dub, and win in New York, it felt like this was going to be on his shoulders, win or lose. I'm going to go, though, with Evan Mobley, because doesn't have the 38 points like he did the other night that won that game. Doesn't have, you know, he does have 12. He has 6 boards, 3 assists, had a steal, 2 blocks. I just thought late, the defense, particularly when he's contesting Julius Randle, he had a strip and steal. He had a contest, a block late in this game that forced a turnover. He just had like an unreal defensive game inside and particularly late when they just needed to get a couple stops. This Cavs team is funny to me sometimes because it feels like when the defense isn't fully kind of at its best, the offense suffers. And like sometimes they just need like one or two stops to really give them a chance. And Mobley kind of provided that late in this game. He's just having like he's just an unreal like wacko defender. I have so much fun just like watching him be like a weird alien body man in some of this stuff.
He's such a cerebral defender, and it's fascinating just how he functions as a player overall. I will say like the defense on Julius Randle was pretty suboptimal across the board. We had mentioned it in the preview episode, like, hey, Randle is a guy who's playing at an all-star level for the Knicks, and so is Jalen Brunson, and that'll be my play of the night. Actually, it's just an entire canvassing by Isaac Okoro, but Yeah, Mobley was really impressive in this one defensively. Like, the Cavs did the best they could defending Randle, I think. Just, like, the guy just had that shot going for him tonight. Oh,
we will be talking about Julius Randle bombing from three in the context of our third segment, because I have some thoughts.
I believe it. Oh, I believe it.
I have
it,
some thoughts.
I mean, my Saturday night for me is just the Cleveland outscored New York 52-38 in the paint, and just the inverse of that is the Knicks made five more three-pointers on the same amount of attempts as Cleveland, and, like, if you look at it that way, that's like a 15-point swing, and maybe that's just a little bit of the difference maker here, but, like, the Cavs just aren't currently equipped to have the shooters on their roster. Like, yeah, Dean Wade only played less than 5 minutes. Jetty Osmond played less than three. Kevin Love only attempted one three-pointer, but, like, it's Donovan Mitchell leading your team in three-point shooting, and then it's a combination of Darius Garland and Caris LeVert making the second most after that. It's just not sustainable for you, and a lot of that can be attributed to Julius Randle, again, going bombs away from three-point range, but the Cavs are just a flawed team, and I think sometimes when they face teams that are just hot from three-point range, it's really hard for them to dig themselves out of a hole when they're so overly reliant on just creating interior pressure and then not really having much to show for it when teams then switch their defensive focus to defending the interior.
So my stat of the night, 19 points off of 10 Cavs turnovers for the Knicks. The Cavs had fewer turnovers than the Knicks. But the Knicks just really, really punished the Cavs' turnovers, and that kind of stuff does make a difference. Let's go to play. So there was a fast break. I thought the beginning of the second half was the best the Cavs played this entire game. The energy was great. The defense was great. They were getting out in transition. Yeah. And about 9:30 to go, they get a stop. There's a throwaway ball. Mitchell gets a loose ball. He looks up, passes Jared Allen. Jared Allen hits the bounce pass to Darius Garland for the layup. Just like the ball is popping, it is flying. They are moving. They're making things easier for themselves. That they're 3-on-2 against the Knicks, who just have no shot to stop them in transition at this point. Like, this was just like the Cavs, like, kind of, I think, at some of their best this entire game. And this is the kind of stuff they need. That, like, you're obviously not going to get turnovers every single time. You're just not. That's not sustainable. You can't bank on that. You cannot, like, bank on, like, loose errant passes, but you can, like, I think they just, like, need to get a little more pace, a little more out in transition, and, like, try to make things easier for themselves. And this is, like, the best example of that. It's, look, you got a loose ball. You don't, like, Mitchell didn't, like, take a second to gather his dribble and then push and, like, reset against a set defense. He just, like, got the ball, looked up, realized that he had an opportunity, and Garland's already moving before, like, Julius Randle's even had a chance to get back. Just A+, 10 out of 10 fast break Cavaliers.
Yeah, and I think the third quarter opening kind of gave you reason to be optimistic about how the Cavs are going to play. It looked like they were making some adjustments at first just to kind of slow down Randle at times, especially maybe not so much on the perimeter, but on the interior at least. And this kind of goes hand in hand with my stat overall for the night is New York has two all-star caliber players on their roster in Julius Randle and Jalen Brunson. And my play of the night is just Isaac Okoro's defense wire to wire on Jalen Brunson. He really frustrated Brunson all throughout the night. I think there were some moments where Brunson was able to get some late minute heroics, especially at the free throw line at the end. But overall, he was 5 of 13 from the floor, which is not great. 14 points, 4 assists. And for context, on the season, Brunson is averaging, I believe, yeah, he's averaging 22.3 points per game. And, like, that's just really good defense from Isaac Okoro on that part. Like, the Cavs had a clear assignment for him. They said, okay, go defend their best perimeter player, and it's not Quentin Grimes as much as the Knicks fans like to think it is. It's Jalen Brunson, and the Isaac Okoro did a really good job. Like, that's my sicko pick, just because really good play. Like, the Cavs had a clear understanding of who the head of the snake was. They just didn't really consider Julius Randle as much.
Yeah, Randle got really hot.
He's an odd player. He's just a fascinating player to me. His career arc is very interesting, from, like, his time in Kentucky to the Lakers, the Pelicans, to now.
Well, even just, like, the last, like, couple of years, it's like he has, like, he kind of, like, dragged the Knicks to that 4 seed 2 years ago. Then they play Atlanta in round one. Atlanta wins, and then, you know, Atlanta goes on that run that ends in the Ben Simmons non-layup against Atlanta. And then, you know, last year is a big regression. He's, like, feuding with Knicks fans, and he's, like, in the All-Star conversation again this year. So, really interesting player.
Julius Randle's the reason why James Harden's with the Sixers.
Wow. All right. After this break, we're going to come back, talk about three-point defense and the Cavs rotation. We'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. All right, Chris Manning, Evan Damel here. Last segment on today's episode, Your Team Every Day. By the way, Evan, let's go to the rotation first.
Okay.
Because I don't have as much to say about this. Because this is one game. We talked about wondering, like, okay, what does this look like? Now Mitchell might be out, and like that makes it some of this to, like, harder to kind of extrapolate. But just the minute totals in this game were so heavily skewed toward the starters. Garland plays basically 35. Mitchell plays 38. Allen plays just a shade under 39. Mobley plays just a shade under 38. Okoro plays 30 minutes, 37 seconds. Off the bench, Caris LeVert led all players off the bench with 20 minutes and 49 seconds. Ricky Rubio plays 13. Kevin Love plays 12 and took one shot. Nothing burger game from Kevin Love. Lamar Stevens plays 6. Dean Wade plays 4. Jetty Osmond plays 2 minutes and 49 seconds of basketball. That is not a lot of, like, insight into how they're going to manage this bench. And it's like running so heavy on your starters, I understand the impulse and I understand, like, kind of why you do that. It just, that's a little like skewing a little towards that starting five. I think maybe like a tad too much. And if you're just keeping minute totals down and kind of managing that. And like, it's just like I don't know what that even says about what JB thinks about the depth, if anything. Like, it's hard. It makes me kind of wonder, like, okay, why do you feel like, you know, like, what is it about the depth that you can't, like, trust a little bit more on this? And like, what is it about that depth that kind of made you just say, hey, we're going to play all the starters like 38 minutes and live or die with them?
It is a fair question. I think the Cavs just have had a very lackluster bench unit in general this season. Like, I think a lot of folks had the hopes and ambition that Ricky Rubio was going to save this bench right away. People really were making a big deal about Bickerstaff playing 11 players in the first half, and I didn't see it as a big deal because Rubio's still technically on a minutes restriction. He's on a back-to-backs restriction. Dean Wade's on a minutes restriction, and he's still trying to get comfortable after missing 7 weeks of time. Kevin Love's not doing well physically just because of that thumb injury. And like he said to Chris Fedor at Cleveland.com, like, it's a thumb issue that's bothering him and his shooting mechanics right now. And like, yes, he's a liability defensively, but there's like a lot going on at once for the Cavs where you're trying to play a lot of guys to kind of figure out what works. People are like losing their minds that Bickerstaff is kind of tinkering in the rotations at times. And I don't see a big deal with this in game 49 of the season. If you're trying to figure out, like, okay, we know what we know. Like, yes, Donovan Mitchell's super. Like, we know what we know. We know what's effective for this team right now up to this point with the guys that we've had. How does it look with some of these new bodies and new faces? And can we create new wrinkles and opportunities to make life easier on either end of the floor? And people for some reason think that's like a fireable offense to kind of like tinker with things. And they're like, instead of leaning on what you know, but that's part of the NBA is like trying to figure out how to make things work. And the Cavs are, once again, a flawed roster. I think they are very set in that core four. Clearly, they have a lot of questions with their bench. Like, I think Ricky Rubio is showing signs that he is not fully healthy. And he is a guy that is in his mid-30s and also has torn the same ACL twice. Like, I think that you're just not going to get the same guy again. Kevin Love has cooled off considerably and his shooting has just completely fallen off a cliff because of that thumb injury. Dean Wade is still coming back, so like you can't expect him to play a lot. Lamar Stevens just isn't a functional three-point shooter. Like, yes, he can get them for you every now and then, but like he isn't going to give you much. Isaac Okoro is starting for now, and that works. Caris LeVert's too streaky, but needs the ball in his hands to function. Like, there's just a lot of odd-fitting pieces, and I don't envy Cleveland's coaching staff trying to fit this all together and trying to figure out something that works so that you can find some type of spark to hold on to carry you on the road when you are just, like, league-wide speaking, like a bad road team. And I think there's not going to be like a dramatic overhaul at the trade deadline. It's not going to be like when Kobe Altman took a stick of dynamite to the 2018 Cavs, but there's going to have to be some type of change. Like, they need to add some type of wing shooting from somewhere. People can scream online and be upset about how he doesn't play Jetty Osmond more than 15 minutes a night and shouldn't be playing Lamar Stevens and Isaac Okoro. But Bickerstaff's also a defensive first coach. He believes he can win by grinding games out and winning on the interior. And that's what the Cavs kind of try to do against the Knicks. And it's just a very hard tightrope walk at the end of the day. And that's just kind of the soapbox I'm willing to die on here is there's a reason why Chris and I are having this conversation. There's a reason why a lot of you are listening to this podcast right now or going on Twitter or wherever to complain about the Cavs issues on a nightly basis. But in the myopic sense, yes, it's okay to get frustrated by it, but like you can't let this weigh on you so much. Cavs are still trying to figure things out. 49 games into the season, because this is the first time they're probably truly healthy since training camp. And like, that's really hard to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, a lot to unpack there.
I vented, sorry.
Yeah, we're along a little long there, but I think there is room to like look at Bickerstaff and be like, are you like? I think there's room to look at this and be like, inventive enough? Is this creative?
There's valid criticisms to what he does and how he deploys things, but some of the stuff I see, I'm just like, why are we getting mad about this? There's
you're seeing it on Twitter.com, which is like a stupid website full of people yelling about things for like no reason.
Well, no, shout out to my buddy Jordan Christmas for lighting the fuse. He's like, I log on to Twitter every time the Cavs are doing bad and check your mentions and laugh, and then I check them tonight, and I'm just like. So, JC, if you're listening, thank you.
Yeah, Twitter's bad. Just don't use... Here's the thing. Just have, like, normal reactionary conversations. Save it for, like, what you're actually thinking about this. And, like, I advise people to do this. So don't go on Twitter and get yourself pissed off. It's stupid. And, like, also just, like, look. Yes, you're right that this is, like, a thing you have to give people time to evolve. You have to give people time to think. But, like, this is a league and this is a situation where, like, I think, like, if there is expectation to win, there is expectation to maximize what this is. And like, I think at times it feels like that is not always happening. And like that some of that is out of their control. I think we can say that, but there also are just moments where it's like, we're in a spot, I think watching this team where you see what is happening at times and you see some of the stuff that happens. Like I think like the end of the Memphis game and this are like cousins of like, you kind of just mishandled some stuff at the end of games and you got to just be okay. A little more creative, a little more manageable in some of those things. I think that's very fair. I think Bickerstaff's done like a very good job. I think he obviously has been like the right coach to succeed John Boeheim. But I think when you get Donovan Mitchell, and I think when you have Darius Garland and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, like expectations and your scrutiny goes up. That's just the reality of that situation for him. Absolutely. And for everyone. For Kobe Altman too.
Yeah, Kobe Altman too. JB Bickerstaff, Kobe Altman, the entire everybody in the Cavs organization. But I'll just say this. Give the people in the front office, give the coaching staff an opportunity to lead this team to the playoffs for the first time. Because before Donovan Mitchell, this team wasn't in the playoffs. And once they get there, you can then evaluate the whole body of work for this season. And then you can say like, okay, this works, this didn't work. And maybe then you can say, okay, JB isn't the guy to take them all the way. But in the moment, it's not getting so upset over the myopic, like just worldview.
Yeah, just go off Twitter, Evan. That's my advice. All right, we're going to end there. We did not get to talking about three-point shooting defense today as we planned. Kind of went a little long there, so we're going to roll that over to Thursday's show. I will just say that this is what I'll tease on this. I think that if Julius Randle is going to go 8 of 12 from 3 against you, that is just probably shot-making, and that is a little bit weird. And that is just it, like, is okay...
Is it as bad as Anthony Lamb going 4 of 8 from 3-point range?
Look, sometimes this stuff just like happens and 3-point defense is like very luck based. I think there is for us in the way we can view things and what we have access to. I think like I was texting with someone works in the league about this tonight. And as Randle was going off, I was like, okay, like I got to think about this. And Jackson Flickinger, friend of the program, wrote a piece about 3-point defense over at Fear the Sword that you should go read as well. And he gave his take on it. I think what I tend to think is that like it is less about like it is a process question more than like are the shots going in against you question. And like you can look at volume, you can look at like some of the stuff, you can like look at effort and maybe like over this last 15-16 game stretch where things have got a little wonky, like maybe there is like some effort or fatigue stuff. The Cavs have played a lot of games. It's possible. I tend to think that this is like a shot making thing where teams are maybe you're just having to survive shot making. And maybe my take is that I wonder if it tells us that the Cavs have a problem overcoming other teams having really crazy shot making nights unless that they like can't contain those shot making nights.
I agree with that. I think it's that and they just kind of lack the personnel to match that shot making.
But it's like if it's Julius Randle, I'm going to go back and like watch his shot attempts and his threes because he was 8 of 12 from 3, okay?
That's bonkers.
He was 3 of 9 on two-pointers. They did like a, like, objectively, like, they did the thing inside on him where you're like, yeah, they contested his shots at the rim very well. He was 8 of 12 from 3. Over half of his shots came from 3. 8 of his 11 makes were 3-pointers. Like, yes, he got to the line 7 times as well. He made 6 free throws. Like, that's good, too. He had a really good night. But, like, he just, like, made 8 threes. And sometimes, like, if Julius Randle makes 8 threes against you, I kind of just want... And you have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen defending him. And, like, first watch, like, I don't feel like they did a poor job on just that. Like, Austin Carr on the broadcast was like, you can't go under him. You absolutely should go under Julius Randle every time. That's the scouting report. Go under on Julius Randle. Let him shoot. Let him take the threes. And if he makes 8 threes against you, fine, whatever. He's not Kevin Durant or like any of these like Uber forwards. He can get hot and you have to deal with that. And maybe there is an adjustment late. But like, if he makes 8 threes against you, then you just tip your cap to him and be like, shot making, man. I don't know. That happens sometimes. I am not super pressed about this.
Yeah, and for context, he is hitting 34.5% of his 3-point attempts this season. So tonight was just certainly an anomaly. And I think maybe having that Warriors game in the rearview mirror doesn't make it easier for some people to digest, but it was just a weird night. Like, you go under on him, like you said, because you don't want him getting easy looks in the paint or at the bucket because he's a much better shooter on the inside than on the outside. And you just kind of throw up your hands and say, shoot, man. Like, they played really good defense on everyone else on the Knicks besides Julius Randle. Like, Julius Randle single-handedly won this game for New York tonight.
Yeah. Like, he got hot. And that's going to happen. And maybe, like that can just happen. Like, that, the Cavs have had that. Like, Donovan Mitchell kind of did that to the Bulls when he scored 71. He just had, like, a monster game.
55.5.
Yeah. The Cavs, like, went, like, beat Portland on a night where Dame had, like, 50 points. Like, this can happen. I'm looking up accuracy right now in terms of defensive shooting accuracy, and we're going to end on that and tell you where the Cavs are at right now. Evan, give me your best okay, what do you think the Cavs are in terms of 3-point defense on the season? In terms of like where they are in terms of how teams are shooting 3 against them?
Do you want a percentage or like where they stand overall?
Give me the ranking. I'm not going to ask you to do percentage. I'll give you the percentage, but give me your guess on where they are.
22nd.
29th.
Oh.
Teams are shooting 38% from 3 against the Cavs. That's 1.6% above league average. That to me is not like, and like the worst team in the league is San Antonio. Like Miami is near the bottom of this. So it's like, this isn't like all, like there are good teams that are having this problem as well. The Cavs are also, they're giving up 40, teams are shooting 42.7% of corner threes against them. That's like 6% or excuse me, 4% above league average. Teams are shooting 36.2% above on non-corner threes against them. That's a little bit above league average as well. It's 20th in the league. And in terms of frequency,
that's fascinating.
Like,
because there's a lot of factors that come into play into that. But like, that's fascinating to me.
And on top of that, in terms of the amount of corner threes they're giving up, the league average is 9% of the shots they give up are corner threes. The Cavs are giving up like 9.7% of corner threes, like a little more than league average. And teams are just like housing them from there. So like, don't know what to tell you. I don't think this is like a thing that they're doing poorly. I think they're just getting kind of like, they're getting math there, and there's just variance. And like, I don't know, we'll talk about this more tomorrow. I'm Chris Manning, that's Evan Damrell. We're gonna get out of here. Cavs lose to the Knicks. We'll update you on Donovan Mitchell as well come the Thursday episode, and we'll get you ready for Cavs Rockets, which the Cavs should win that game. And if they don't win that game, That'll be much more awkward than talking about the Cavs losing to the Knicks. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Peace out.